to them now. It was a very nice statement they put out. We'll see what happens. No, we'll see what happens. It could even be the 12th.
Today in Manhattan, Harvey Weinstein was arraigned on rape and sexual assault charges. He will post a $1 million bail and wear an electronic monitor. Benjamin Brofman is Weinstein's attorney.
We believe that at the end of the process, Mr. Weinstein will be exonerated. Someone inside asked me how Mr. Weinstein feels this morning, and my response was, as well as can be expected when you are accused of a crime that you vehemently deny having committed.
This is USA Radio News.
Medicare rules are confusing. They should be. There are over 130,000 pages of regulations. There's Part A through D, Medicare Advantage, and Medigap. According to the CMS, there are government programs available that can help you pay for your medical expenses. Choosing the right Medicare plan is a really big deal. The wrong choice can cost you a lot of money, and the right choice can put more money in your pocket. Call one of our licensed representatives today. At 65 Plus Medicare, our free service can show you a plan that will maximize your Medicare benefits, ensure you are taking advantage of all available government assistance programs, and save you money. Call now.
800-635-6303. 800-635-6303. 800-635-6303. That's 800-635-6303.
Not all benefits listed may be available on all plans or in a single benefit package. Enrollment in the described plan type may be limited to certain times of the year unless you qualify for a special enrollment period. No obligation to enroll.
Facebook's imposing new rules on certain types of ads it runs. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes has the details.
Facebook announcing all election-related and issue ads in the U.S. on both Facebook and Instagram must now be clearly labeled as such, including disclosures appearing at the top of the ads to reveal who paid for them. Ads coming from specific candidates have already included the disclosure labels since October. Facebook had said it was going to require that of issue ads from outside parties as well, but didn't provide the details until Thursday, when the expanded requirements also took effect. Advertisers need to verify with Facebook via mail that they reside in the U.S. before they're permitted to run political ads targeted at Americans.
United Airlines announced it had reached a resolution with the family whose French bulldog puppy died after being placed in an overhead bin. The puppy died in March after the flight attendant forced the pet's owner to put the animal in the overhead bin, which United said is against company policy. This is USA Radio News.
The following update is for drivers who pay too much for car insurance due to DUIs, DWIs, tickets, or anything else. Our company specializes in low-cost SR22 auto insurance. We know that mistakes happen and offer free quotes.
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
Well, good afternoon. Program the Sports Guys, and I'm Pat Smits, your One Sports Guy is here, and let's first of all talk about the weather for this wonderful three-day weekend for most of us. And actually, it's changed a little bit because tonight it's supposed to be mostly clear and then patchy fog. Not talking about any kind of rain, but then tomorrow, Saturday, again, they have a chance of showers and thunderstorms mainly after 3 p.m., but patchy fog before 8 a.m., and then it is going to be partly sunny with a high of about 88 degrees. There's a chance of thunderstorms later, 30% chance. By Saturday night, by tomorrow night, heavy rain, chance of thunderstorms, 60% chance, and then 70% chance of heavy rain, and into Sunday, showers likely, then thunderstorms are likely, about a 70% chance, both Sunday during the day and Sunday night. Memorial Day now sounds a little better. There's a slight chance of showers with thunderstorms also possible after 9 a.m. It will then be mostly cloudy, but doesn't seem that in this area it will be a complete washout. And then Monday night, it's mostly cloudy. So that's that's what's happening. And be right back with sports after bringing you some information from our sponsors. And hopefully John Manfreda will be joining me, because otherwise you're going to be listening to me talk about Super Bowl games, I think. Maybe that's what I'll talk about. You know, draft is over. Everybody's working. Feel sorry for all these rookies who are looking around and trying to get past that first cut and keep playing. So we shall see, and we will also see how well the teams really did in the draft. Now, some players, of course, they don't expect to play the first year, but other players, they really did expect them to hit the ground running, so to speak.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR-DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Okay, I also wanted to give you some information about some things that are going on this weekend. Of course, the Community Day, Hunterdon County Community Day, is going to be on Saturday, June 2nd, 2018, at the County Fairgrounds. And this is the fifth annual Community Day from 11 to 4. Lots of things for the kids. And you know, there's a petting zoo, there's pony rides, certainly vendors. I think there's going to be my daughter's favorite, a reptile show. And there's also going to be tethered balloon rides. And so that this is really good local sponsors. Unity Bank, Hunterdon Healthcare, the Cultural Heritage, Chamber of Commerce, of course, really it's fun. I don't know if there may be a $10 charge for parking. I know that there's no charge, no admission charge. And then on Sunday, there's going to be from 10 to 4 at Stengel Factory, there's going to be an arts and crafts. Looks like some really high-end artists and artisans, and that show is well worth it. And it's both a show and sale of handmade, and really some of them exceptional handmade crafts. So good thing to check that out. Then there's also, this is a second annual, We Are One, a community celebration on June 3rd at Cavallo Park in Lambertville. And that's from 1 until 5. There's going to be live music, free kids activities, food vendors, and that's hosted by the Lambertville Human Rights Council and Fisherman's Mark Social Services, which advertises itself as Help When Help Is Needed. I also noticed that there's another brochure on my desk, and actually this is a really important help for people in the community 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Every single day of the year, the Hunterdon Helpline serves residents, organizations, agencies, First Assist, Emergency Services. They have senior and disability services. They provide service. Hunterdon Hispanos and a community translation center, And it's basically a 24-hour hotline, really important. And the literacy services, and I know people say, well, everybody's literate. Not true. They provide customized one-on-one basic or English. It should be basic for English or ESL, English as a second language, instruction for the adult learner, not for children, but for adults. And they also have programs and services that address key factors for a person's success, both health, finances, education, and, of course, Huntington Hispanos addresses the needs of the Latino community for easier access and navigation in the community. So this is a really, certainly, and for seniors, if there's questions about seniors, they provide a confidential 24-hour service, and no one is turned away. So this is a really, let me give you their number. It's 1-800-272-4630, and they certainly also do things like provide for emergency shelter, as I said, support for seniors, suicide prevention, mental health resources, support for families, and today with the opioid crisis and other things, really important to have an organization like Huntington Hispanos out there and available. Okay, well, let's get to sports. And I was thinking Jerry Rice had a book I found interesting, 50 Years, 50 Moments, and the Most Unforgettable Plays in Super Bowl History. He wrote that, obviously, not alone, but it's pretty comprehensive for someone who, it's a pretty comprehensive book. Maybe beyond what the beginner, beginning football fan might want, but certainly there's some, interesting statistics. So someone who wants to kind of catch up, and I know people think that I'm pretty crazy as far as, sports, and I suppose both of my compadres, Bill and John, neither of whom are here, of course, they also are, what can I say, sports enthusiasts to the max. So that is, I'm just trying to think of, since everybody's Giants, that could be one to start with, of course. Super Bowl 21, January 25th, 1987, was, of course, the New York Giants and the Denver Broncos, played in Pasadena in the Rose Bowl. And anybody out there who's a football fan, the Rose Bowl is an unbelievable stadium, great place to watch football, and it was always the Rose Bowl, of course, is played in the Rose Bowl. It's in Pasadena, California. Great parade in the morning before the Rose Bowl, which is, of course, the college, not the Super Bowl. And, in fact, that would be my favorite time to watch a game there. Super Bowl 21, and, actually Phil Simms had the game of his life. I mean, it's no question. The great Hall of Fame tackle for the Pittsburgh Steelers, Joe Green, said that in a 13-year career that included 4 Super Bowl titles, he experienced being in the zone, a place where one feels they can do no wrong just one time. And I think anyone who looked at Phil Sims, thought he was in the zone. And, of course, the zone is a place that you rarely visit, and it's not the same place you go every week, Green said. And he said, he admitted that he only got there once in the 1974 AFC Championship game versus the Oakland Raiders. But he said it's a feeling you remember forever, and the zone is sacred ground. So if anybody ever asks you about the zone, that is, as we said, something really special. Now, Sims, I don't know if anyone else can say that they actually experienced the zone in a Super Bowl. However, in that case, it was a long and challenging journey for him to reach that sacred ground. And Phil Sims is an interesting guy, raised in a tiny Kentucky town, and he attended Morehead State and drafted out of that obscure college, Morehead State, in 1979. So almost 40 years ago, that's actually 39 years ago, and he had to endure some rather painful memories for the first few years he played. He was not a popular choice among the local big city media and the diehard supporters. For the first 5 years, he also was hurt often. And his stats read more like a doctor's file. Somebody said that his stats looked more like a doctor's file than a quarterback rating sheet. And he had a difficult time adjusting to head coach Bill Parcells. I won't go into that. As you know, I'm not a Giants fan. I was not a Parcells fan. But in any event, when Sims stood tall in the pocket against the skeptical press, and came back strong after being benched for poor play and injuries, he earned the respect of his teammates on both sides of the ball. And somebody said that he worked harder than everyone else, a gritty, hard-nosed, incredibly competitive, fiery guy with a cannon-strong arm. I remember that arm. He really did have a cannon-strong arm. And you know, it's always fun to watch players like that. And, of course, you know, two that come to my mind as a Packer fan are Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. Phil McConkey, who we remember as that giant wide receiver, you know, said that he could remember the beatings that Phil Sims took. And that... But going back, this Super Bowl was one of the greatest quarterback performances of all times. And he completed 88% of his passes. That was 22 out of 25. No interceptions. 3 touchdown passes for 283 yards. Anybody who's interested in statistics. I sometimes think, and I shouldn't say this, but this is a guy thing. I think that's why... When I was growing up, most of the little boys did well in math because they had to figure out the percentages, and they did that because of, you know, usually baseball, but also football statistics. And in this case, you know, he defeated the Denver Broncos 39-20. So that was certainly a game that... was memorable. You talk to any Giant fan who was alive, and I think that you know, they will tell you that that was certainly probably one of the most memorable you know, games that they recall. And I also recall it because of how they got there, but that's another story. So the Giants did have a ferocious defense that year. considered second best in the league. And so the first and foremost, everybody knew that Phil Simms was mentally tough. He was really a good quarterback and a very likable guy. I mean, I think that, as I said, I didn't like Parcells. And I think that, I think he made a lot of mistakes, but certainly I guess I can't say anything about that game. And I remember there was some swagger, I guess. But what else can you say about Simms? And seems like, and afterwards broadcasting, certainly seemed like a really nice guy. Just nice guy, not as jerky as so many of them. Whatever. So let me, still John's not here. And I'm kind of struggling because I don't know what else to talk about. So I'll talk about some of the Super Bowl games. And right now, I'm going to bring some information from our sponsors.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. You're listening to HunterdonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located at the historic Large House, 119 Main Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programs. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in that critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
This is Tony Clark, Para Planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you...
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
Okay, we're back. It's the sports guys, or I should say guy, since it's one. And I was talking earlier about Phil Sims, and of course he was the most valuable player of that Super Bowl 21. And because one of the, he wrote an essay for a book about Super Bowls and about a retrospective. And one of the things he said is that great success stories in the Super Bowl are about coaches who are not afraid to take a chance, to do something differently, to do whatever it takes to give their team the best opportunity to win. Yep, I think that's certainly true. And according to Sims, he knows that might sound simple, but not always the case. A lot of coaches take the safe route because they worry about being second-guessed, and they should. If you take a chance and lose, even though you were in the Super Bowl, you stuck one foot out the door on your way to being fired. If you win, of course, you go down in history as a genius. So it does take courage, and some of the best coaches and strongest people in the world don't have that kind of courage. And it's very interesting to watch coaches in any game, but especially in a game, the Super Bowl, because they're either the winner or, you know, even though they're the second best team for the year, they don't feel it. So one of the things that Sim said is the earliest example he could think about in the Super Bowl goes all the way back to Vince Lombardi. See, those of you who know me knew that somehow I would get back to the Packers, even though I was talking about Phil Sims. And what he said is he, meaning Phil Sims, heard a story about how the Packers were getting ready to play the Kansas City Chiefs in the first Super Bowl. Lombardi was looking at films of Kansas City's defense and said, "I don't like playing this team because we can't run the football well against them. I think we're going to have to throw the ball to win." Well, and if you remember back when they played the first Super Bowl, and certainly the Packers under Lombardi, they really were a running team. I mean, there was no, you know, question about it. So anyway, Lombardi, according to the story, kept looking at film, trying to find out a way to run the football because, as Packers, that's what they wanted to do, or at least that's what Lombardi wanted to do. And you know, growing up, as I said, you know, most of the teams really, you know, the run was the run. So what in Green Bay, we called it the Green Bay sweep, and that's what the Packers were all about when I was growing up, and what also made Lombardi famous. But when he realized the Packers were better off passing, he told Bart Starr, win the game by throwing. And Starr did. He threw for 250 yards and two touchdowns to lead Green Bay to a 35-10 victory. So now, if the Packers, let's remember, if the Packers had lost, the legacy of Lombardi might not be what it is today. Probably we'd be saying, ah, he really blew that one. He tried to run that Green Bay sweep, and it cost him the Super Bowl. So then going to Phil Sims, of course, the week before the New York Giants faced the Denver Broncos in Super Bowl 21, Parcells set the tone for what would be a very aggressive approach by the Giants. He, according to Sims, he kept telling him, don't be afraid to take chances. I can still remember, according to Sims, he could still remember the look on his face, even if deep down inside he was as fearful as anyone of losing in the Super Bowl. Parcells didn't show it, and he remained that way after the opening kickoff. However, in the second half, the Giants, if you diehard football fans would remember, they were trailing 10-9 and facing a 4th-and-1. So that's always the dilemma. 4th-and-1 looks like it's going to be, you know, let's go for it. On the other hand, you know, they really have a dilemma. What are they going to do? So in that case, if you remember, the Giants went for it, and it led to a touchdown. And, you know, I don't recall, but I've read, if I remember, that they even ran a flea flicker to set up another score. And they were taking chances, doing risky things, and that's why they ended up with a 39-20 victory. And so, according to Sims, he looks at Parcells' coaching job against the Buffalo Bills in Super Bowl 25 as another example of successful risk-taking. And according to Sims, there's no question that the Bills were a more talented team, but the Giants were more patient. They kept running the football, eating up time, taking advantage of the aggressive players on the Buffalo's defense with tiny boot passes, which, of course, the defense hates. And, you know, they would run a short boot pass, each completion, just enough yards to get a first down, and they just kept doing that, more time off the clock. And so the Giants' methodical offensive strategy slowed them down, and it was well-orchestrated team concept that, along with, of course, the missed field goal at the end, that was, of course, critical. The Bills, you know, missed a field goal, and then the Giants won 20-19. So, of course, that field goal would have totally changed the history of that game. And I guess, you know, as much as I don't like him, Bill Belichick took one of the all-time coaching risks when he led the New England Patriots against the St. Louis Rams in Super Bowl 36. And he did it by keeping his team's risks on defense to a minimum. And when the Patriots played the Rams at Foxborough that season, and they had blitzed Kurt Warner like crazy, which made sense considering Belichick's creative blitz schemes, and the fact that he was going against a pocket passer in an offense that liked to throw the ball. However, when they played them in the Super Bowl, Belichick reversed his field, and his defense was conservative and physical, and that the analysis was that that had much to do with the Patriots' 2017 win, as Brady's MVP performance, or that last second field goal. But I mean, come on, that's exactly, you know, what can win games. And when you think about it, these games were very close. 2017, and actually the Giants when it was 2019. So, 2019, 2017, that shows you coaches. And, of course, I'd like to, of course, always go back to my favorite coach, and it had to be Lombardi. And Lombardi and Bart Starr, really clicked. And I think it happened after Bart Starr told Lombardi that he had to show him some respect so that the other players would show him respect. And the thing that is always most amazing to me is when Lombardi went to Green Bay, not only was it a losing team, I believe, if I recall, the year before he came, it was 11-1. I mean, they had, one win and 11 losses. So I guess I should say it was 1-11, because they certainly didn't have 11 wins. So this is what Bart Starr had to say about Lombardi. My first encounter with Coach Lombardi was at what today would be called a mini camp. He had just been hired, and he brought a number of us in to acquaint us with his offensive system. After about an hour, we took a break. I ran to the Packers office building and grabbed the payphone and called my wife back in Alabama. Honey, we're going to win, I said to her. We could have taken a break after 20 minutes, and I could have made the same phone call. It was that obvious. The way he approached us, his organizational skills, the charisma of him standing in front of you, preaching all of it, was so engaging listening to him. I should say it was so engaging. And then Bart Starr went on to say, listening to him, I was so excited. I probably wasn't even touching the chair I was sitting in. Brings up a great quote, and I always thought it was Dave Robinson, but my husband Dave said it was somebody else who said, when Coach Lombardi told you to sit, he didn't even look for the chair. And anyway, Bart went on to say, we had the core of a good football team, but what we lacked was leadership. From the time he began to speak, it was obvious that we now had that leadership. He brought that the day he walked in the front door. Amazing, but really true, because the team, as I said, they pretty much were the same team they had been the year before. So Bart goes on to say, we were much better organized and we were much better prepared because of his leadership and teaching. He took great pride in teaching. He said that coaching was the epitome of teaching. We began to grow very rapidly in his system. And, of course, very shortly after that, won the Super Bowl. So the Super Bowl 1 and 2 were, of course, won by the Packers. And probably a good thing they didn't play in 3. But in any event, The Super Bowl, the first time, I'm trying to remember, I know it was out in California, and I think the tickets were, maybe $12, $13. But there were some really, interesting quotes from these guys. And I mean, one of the Lombardi ones that I like from Lombardi was, "You damn well better not let that Mickey Mouse league," referring to the American Football League, "beat you. I'd be a disgrace. It'd be a disgrace, a complete, utter disgrace." And of course, those of us who grew up on football that are old enough remember the championship games before there was a Super Bowl. So what we do know also is that in some cases, the Super Bowl has embellished coaching careers that otherwise might be remembered as being ordinary. For example, we remember that Chuck Knoll had not had a great record until he, but then really shone on the Super Bowl. And guess who has just walked in right on time? Who's going to take over tell you what's happening in sports?
Pat, I apologize, but there was an emergency just about an hour ago, and the emergency was mine. So had to deal with that, but I apologize. And here we are today, the start of the so-called start of the summer.
I think so. Of a long weekend that everybody, unfortunately, most of it's going to be rained out.
Yeah, that seems to be. But, you know, you will still get sports in other venues where the weather is good. And in particular, you know, there's a lot going on in the NFL. But nobody's thinking NFL right now because baseball's in full swing. But there's a lot of important stuff going on in the league.
Well, let's talk about it because I was just talking about some of the Super Bowls. Going back to...
And what better to talk about, especially on a nice summer day or on a bad... Really any time. And there's so many... What do we got? 52 now to talk about. But...
What's going on in the NFL?
Well, these training mini camp train camp things tend to be revealing because the rookies show up, maybe some free agents sign up, and they get a little bit of direction. For the Giants, they got a new coach, so they've got a whole new regime there, new coach, general manager, and we're going to see how that plays out. It's really important for them. This whole Beckham thing is playing out, I think, okay in the end. I think he's a very bright young man who is going to come to realize that he is with one of the four or five flagship franchises in the NFL. Okay? Let's go down there. Okay, in the NFL, you got Chicago, Green Bay, the Giants. Who else would you put in that category? Maybe the Rams, maybe.
Maybe the Rams. Well, yeah.
Who else would you – Dallas, I guess. You know, but those are franchises who have won multiple Super Bowls. Well, not the Bears, but the Rams won the one. That's right. Then the second one they blew to the Patriots. But having said that, those are the outstanding kinds of teams who, you know, they strive to do well, I think that at this point, you know, although it's summer, training camp's around the corner. Teams are starting to look at what do we need? What do we have to do? Let's get the strategy going. In Philadelphia, the question becomes, who's going to play quarterback?
Yeah, who's going to be quarterback?
Yeah, I think, you know, they were talking about Foles starting. Now they're saying...
Well, you think Wentz is going to be ready? I heard he wouldn't be ready for about at least a month.
Well, they were saying that, but I guess he had a workout recently in which he was outstanding, showed that he's ahead of schedule. But you know what? Ahead of schedule might mean he plays October 1 rather than November 1. I don't know what that means. They had an offer, Nick Foles to Cleveland for the 35th pick. Now, I don't know if they meant that was this past draft or next year's 35th. I don't know. I heard a Have you heard any of that story?
I haven't, really.
Yeah, they supposedly, and they turned it down, obviously.
Well, I think they have to.
They had to because they don't know. They could, if they trade him and Wentz can't play till November, the season's gone.
Right.
So they can't, and they perched as the defending champions, as much as it pains me to say that. They do have a shot. They're in the conversation. They're certainly one of the top four teams to be considered. They have a lot of depth on the lines, and that's huge. But again, like I said to our co-host, Bill Wolfson, we both missed dearly today, but we know he's down the shore on his sailboat, jealous of him. But as I've said to Bill, show me again. Prove me again. Show me four or five championships like some teams we root for.
Well, but one of the things that happens now, it seems, and I don't know if the Eagles are losing. I don't remember who they've lost, and that becomes.
They
remember
pretty much
the Ravens.
Kept their team intact.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah, they didn't lose many people.
When the Ravens, it seemed to me like, the team there was no the team wasn't the same team, and not even close the year after they won.
Oh yeah, there's very often a huge drop off the year after. The Eagles are in a position, assuming that Foles is ready and plays well, and that Wentz steps in. I mean, they're in a position to win 11, 12, 13 games, get home field advantage, and at least get to the NFC Championship game.
And they have a pretty good who are they playing against?
The real problem, Pat, for all four teams, at least for three of the four, in the NFC East. Whether the Giants coming off Super Bowls a couple years ago, got to face Dallas, got to face Philly. Washington's always tough. That's the toughest division in football. Or at least it's as tough as the black and blue division, the Packers, the Bears, Vikings, and Lions. I think those are the two certainly best, okay? And they're probably on a par. If you add up Super Bowls, NFC East is tops by far, 14 Super Bowls.
That's true. But
okay.
But let's.
But what I'm talking about is year in, year out, tough game. You have six division games that are wars.
Well, and this year, the Packers, I think, have, they go from Los Angeles playing the Rams one week. Next week, they have to play the Patriots.
I mean, that's a very tough one.
Very tough. I mean, from one coast to the other.
Yep.
Two teams that look like they're going to be. The Patriots are always a tough team.
Always tough, although I think we've been saying it the last couple. I really do think this is the year they start to fall off. I do.
Well, we keep saying
that. Everybody says that.
We keep hoping.
All Jet fans hope. I mean, it may come true. It's eventually got to come true.
And all the Patriot fans, keep chuckling away and say, yeah, yeah, yeah. Because they have been on top for so long.
Well, they're smug.
But they're not. You're right, though. I don't think that they're just not in the same category. I mean, maybe the Steelers, but other than that, they don't have a lot of
AFC,
competition.
In the AFC, you'd have to look at New England, the Steelers. I can't say the Raiders anymore because they just haven't been that good for 20 years. Or same thing with the Chiefs. Great regular season team, but they haven't been relevant in decades.
Right.
Okay? So, but you certainly look at the Steelers. You could put the Ravens in that category, but they've won two championships in 15 years. That's okay. I'd put them in the B class. But to me, your top, say, five would be the Giants, Packers, Cowboys, Steelers, Patriots, all of whom have won four, five, or six Super Bowls. So that, now you're talking. So that's why I'm saying and I do give, tip of the hat to the Eagles and their fans. But let me see you do it again. All right? Let me see you do it again.
But you know what? I think they have I thought last year, going into the season, I really thought that the Cowboys were going to be the biggest challenge in that division.
There's no question about it.
And
the Giants were coming off an 11-5.
Right.
Thought they were
still, I just thought that... with Dak Prescott, I just thought that they seemed to have really pulled it together, strong team, and needless to say, they didn't do it. And you look at Eagle fans, you have to go up to them and say, you know, finally. I mean, you have Eagle fans, kind of like Jet fans who've been waiting forever, but you have Eagle fans who've been waiting for, 20, 30 years. And, Packer fans were used to many, many years of losing teams. And so it was nice when it turned around. But Packer fans were more patient, I think, than Eagle fans.
Is, Pat, they go all the way back, literally, to Super Bowl I and right. II. I mean, you can't be any more patient than that. At least the Giants didn't become relevant as a Super Bowl team until 20 years into the tournament. You know, they won Super Bowl right. 20, or 21, was it?
21.
Yeah. And so, but when you think Super Bowl, you think of Green Bay. Green Bay has won 3 championships, and I guess they've lost. How many Super Bowls? They lost to Denver.
They lost to Denver. They lost
to the Patriots.
Patriots. The last, when they played in Dallas.
Yeah. So I guess they're 3-2 in Super Bowls.
Right.
The Giants are 4-1. The Patriots are 5-3. Pittsburgh, I think, Dallas and Pittsburgh have each won 6.
Yes. Actually, I think that's how Dallas was named America's team, wasn't it?
And
everybody liked their colors.
It was a combination. I hate to even refer that, and I don't think it's the case anymore.
No, I never thought it was the case. unfortunately, we had a daughter who went to school down there, and which made it a problem because she became a Dallas fan. And so we have quite a divided family. We have a rather schizophrenic family when it comes to football.
You've got a grandson who's an Eagles fan.
Well, grandson and granddaughter, Eagles fan. Daughter and grandson who are
Cowboys.
Dallas.
Yeah.
Dave and I, of course, are...
Where did you and Dave go wrong? Come on.
Well, that's the daughter who... She has 3 children, and she's the one who went to school in Dallas.
Right.
So, she became a fan. I don't know what happened before that. But so what are you hearing about mini camps? I always like to see it with some undrafted kid who all of a sudden comes in.
Yeah, and it's hard to know. You may have some kid who, let's say, is 5'11", but a phenomenal athlete, but not a prototypical linebacker, so he doesn't get drafted. If you're under 6'3", you're not going to be a linebacker right. in the NFL. Preferably 6'4", okay? But you may get some guy who's 6'1", 6'2", but who's just a phenomenal athlete who can jump, has a lot of speed, and sort of make up for the 2 inches he doesn't have in height. And you get people like that who'll come in, and they're even more motivated to say, I'm right. undrafted, I'm gonna knock this. Oh, there's a first-round draft pick at linebacker, I'm going to go take that guy on. I'm going to beat him. He's got incentive. You could see that.
Well, and also some of the guys who are drafted, but, like in the 6th round, because they come from little schools, and they're not...
Yeah.
I mean, didn't Phil Simms... I know this. He went to Morehouse, right?
Mm-hmm.
He went to... and I don't know where he was in the draft, but I don't think anyone... ever had great expectations when he was drafted.
I agree.
So, and of course there were a couple really late draft picks this time around. One of the things that's interesting now is there's this whole idea of character.
Yes.
And one of the things we can't figure out, some of these guys really drop.
Oh,
because
significantly. I mean, unless you're a top 10 pick,
right.
it becomes very relevant. And even some top 10 people, like the Giants, have stayed away from Adanik and Sue, for example. Everybody knew that guy was a dirtbag, okay? And certain other players like that, even Zeke Elliott, it wasn't as well known, although they did know about it when he was mm-hmm. at Ohio State that he got in trouble. A lot, the Giants had said if he's there, they wouldn't draft him. And you can laugh at that. He's certainly done a good job. But then again, he's gotten his share of trouble.
And I think some of these guys who are trouble probably would do better in some teams rather than others. I mean, I've often thought that, although there were a lot of covered up stuff that went on back in the day in Packers.
Oh, yeah.
There were some trades that, you know, nobody, if they didn't know why, would have ever been able to figure out why in the world the Packers traded certain players.
Well, and that's why they got traded.
Yep. Yeah. And especially in a small town.
Yep.
I mean,
exactly right.
Everybody knew what was going on in Green Bay. They really did.
It was like the Peyton Place of football.
I don't know. I think the Peyton Place of football was in Dallas, to be perfectly.
Well, you're probably right about
one
that.
One of my favorite old books was Dallas North 40.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, remember?
Nick Nolte was in that film, I believe.
Yeah, but the book was even better than the film.
Wow.
And of course,
which is usually the case. But.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, it was you could really figure out exactly who. I mean, it was so thinly disguised. It was really funny.
Yeah.
So what
anyway,
else?
I think that's what's going on. And, you know, you're going to look for teams to be clever, to be shrewd, and to fill the holes that they need to also create the bonding between these new rookies coming in with their teammates, with the coaches. You know, now's an opportunity because when they hit that training camp in July, it starts moving fast.
That's true. But, I'm it's going to be interesting to see, there were – couple of players, of course, that I was really hoping the Packers would trade up to get.
It was a very deep draft, though. See, the problem with it is those teams who traded up gave up a lot because they gave up second and third round picks that some of those picks they were saying would have been high or low first round picks in other years. It was a deep draft. And I would say probably two-thirds, 20 of the 32 teams probably got significant help in this draft, which is unusual.
That is unusual.
But I would say you had a tremendous upgrade with the teams in this draft.
Well,
quarterbacks.
Now you have to feel sorry, though, for these guys because they have to start cutting. And I won't go into my thing, but I just think that they really should expand the roster. You know, don't futz around.
The problem when you start expanding rosters is that you dilute talent around the league and you make it more difficult for the Tampa Bays of the world and the other, you know, the Kansas Cities of the world, the small market teams, even on this revenue sharing in the NFL. You make it a little bit more difficult for some of those teams.
Why do you say that? Because they'd have the same number of people on the team?
They do, but I think... You know, Green Bay has been the exception in all of sports for a very, very small market team to be so successful. And I think a lot of it has to do with what they attract. I mean, if you're a top GM material, you're going to go to a small city, you're going to try to go to New York or Dallas or LA. I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, the people you have in place, the team you assemble that, you know, makes the decisions. And I don't think it's a coincidence that some of your bigger cities, more glamorous cities, have been more successful for that reason. I mean,
really?
Player-wise, they have the same shot.
Yeah.
But if you... Well, let me put it this way. They do have the same shot, but not the same ability. I mean, we can all point to certain teams. You know, Cincinnati, okay? Detroit. I mean, these teams, for decades, have not been within a whiff of a championship. All right. So if you expand the roster, it gives the more talented GMs and scouting teams with other organizations even more ability to harness more better players. So if you allow, let's say, 60 instead of 53, well, that's seven more players Bill Belichick can grab and keep them away from other teams who don't choose as well.
So, well, but, you know, frankly, if they don't choose as well, isn't that their fault? But the reason that I'd like to see it expanded is I do think it
takes... Injuries,
concussions. Injuries, and I think for some kids coming out of college, it takes them longer. In other words, they need to develop.
Use that second and third round pick knowing that kid may not help them for 2 years.
Right.
And they can stick them in the back end of the roster.
Or they can put him on the practice team.
Yeah.
But they
would be the big benefit.
Keep him.